Welcome to the Leadership U podcast.
Support for Leadership U comes from Patridos. Listen, if you're looking for trendy, comfortable, and eco-friendly clothing, this place is for you. I personally love the hats and sweaters from here. I'm actually wearing both right now. The designs are cool and have a little bit of a minimalist style. It's super trendy and comfy. I'm all about it. But they don't just have apparel. They have home goods, art, and lots of other stuff. Baba, I know you're a fan of the mugs. We love all the products and are big fans. And with worldwide shipping, you can order from anywhere on the planet. You can find them online at www.patridos.com. That's www.patridos.com. Leadership U podcast listeners get 10% off their first order with promo code PODCAST. Hey, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of Leadership U. This is your host, Christina.
And Jim.
And today we are super, super excited to have an expert with us and one of our dear friends. She's more like family than a friend, really. We just love her. But we have Dr. Claudine Bentham with us, and she has, let me tell you a little bit about her because I want to brag. So Dr. Claudine has a doctorate in higher education and policy studies from the University of Central Florida. Go Knights. She's worked in the field of education for more than 15 years in various capacities. So from a reading instructor to middle school teacher and a tenured professor. She now serves as the director of the Teaching and Learning Academy at Valencia College. And her primary functions there are to help faculty through the tenure track process and provides courses designed to improve professors' approach to teaching and produce action research projects to deepen student learning. She is literally teaching teachers how to teach. So she's amazing. And in her free time, she also loves to run and spend time with family. So welcome to the podcast, Claudine.
Thank you. Thank you for welcoming me to your podcast. I'm really excited to be here. And I look forward to talking more about the things that I do.
Yeah, which you do so much. Claudine, today we wanted to have you on the podcast specifically because you have such a wealth of information about the learning process and teaching teachers and just providing excellence in education. We wanted to have you on, and our topic today is the leader teacher. So before we jump into all that, we have to ask you one of our icebreaker questions. And today my icebreaker question is, what unusual skill would you like to master? So do you want to go first? Do you have something in mind already?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So I did something with my team a while back, pre-COVID, and it's called Foresight. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of this particular assessment. It's a thinking profile assessment, and you get to like identify like what kind of thinker are you, and how you might, you know, use that strength to develop things within the program in this particular case. So I am a high implementer. I get things done. Like, I just want to get things done. I have no time for small talk or anything. I just want to make sure I check things off my list. I want to work on my deficits. I want to work on things that I do not care for to do. So like, you know, clarifier, always asking questions. I'm like, no, you should know the things. But clarifying is important. Having to ask the right questions to get things done, to make sure that you're identifying the gaps. That is, and it might not seem unusual to some people, but for me, it's unusual because I'm a high implementer. Even the person who's facilitating the seminar or the workshop, she was like, I've never seen this before. Like, you're up in that scale as an implementer. So being a clarifier and an analyst, enjoying problem solving. So I don't like seeing problems. So the fact that there is a person who is an analyst and they enjoy having to solve problems in that way, I just want to tackle it heads on. But the analyst likes to delve in deeper and just to really identify ways in which they can, you know, solve the issue. But I don't like that kind of ickiness. I don't want there to be problems. You know, thanks. So that's unusual for me. But I would like to, you know, just engage in that a little bit more. and explore that.
I love that about you. Everything you said tracks about what we know about you too. Like you get things done. And the fact that even your unusual skill you want to get better at is like getting better at things.
That's good.
Awesome. How about you, Bubba? Is there something unusual?
Yeah. So, Claudine, you know, my family is very talented. They all play musical instruments and sing and draw and art. And I cannot do any of those things. So I have purchased a harmonica and I am hoping that I can master it to play one tune on the harmonica.
Okay. Now that you've said this, our audience is going to be holding you to it. So give us a deadline.
I have a granddaughter, I think, in canto. I think I can do that little tune, basically.
You heard it first here, listeners. He's going to learn in canto and play it for you soon.
Love it.
Soon is very nebulous as far as time is concerned.
In a few years. That's awesome. Claudine, when it happens, I'll text you. I'll be like, listen to the podcast today.
I know. Get it done.
Get it.
For me, I feel like you two just gave like super deep answers that are going to help the world become a better place with music, the arts, and like better leadership skills. But for me, I've always wanted to be able to whistle really, really loud.
Oh boy.
Like, you know how people put their fingers in their mouth and do like the super loud whistle?
Yeah.
I want to figure that out. So I spent a whole summer like trying, I watched YouTube videos. I did all this stuff. I cannot master it. I can whistle regularly, but it's not that loud, piercing, you know, whistle.
Yeah.
So my goal is to learn that. And then one day when we're all in church, because Claudine sings on our worship team, if she's up there, I'm just going to let one loose. And like, you'll know it's me. You'll know that I accomplished our goal.
And my husband has a cool way of doing it. Like with his fingers, he knows how to do it. And it just sounds so cool when he whistles. And so, yes, it's really, really cool. Like it's piercing too.
Yes.
It's very eerie. Yeah. But I think it's really cool the way he does it.
Thank you for validating me.
I can't do it either. It's like saliva and everything. It's just all ickiness.
Yeah. I'll get with him later. Maybe he can give me some lessons.
I know.
Okay, guys. So now that we know what we want to master, Claudine, can you tell us a little bit, just about a little bit more about your background and your experiences, what kind of led you in your role, and now a little bit about what you currently do?
Okay, so I had mentioned before in my bio, Haitian American, right? I'm born and raised in New York, and my family, they were a big proponent in terms of education, first and foremost, especially my father. He was all about education. But there was a time in my life where I just lived my life, and I did things that were not according to his wishes, and I was kind of rebellious, and I struggled in school, and thank goodness I had some great supporters for the most part growing up. But I ended up being on welfare for a little bit of time. And that was heartbreaking. That was the worst experience ever because I had to rely on something. I had to beg people for money. Mm-hmm. And there was a point even, you know, during the recession, like just to fast forward just a little bit, where I felt helpless, right? And education, in all honesty, helped to create pathways for my family. It helped to provide food on the table. It gave me hope in addition to other things that factored in as well. So it's important for me to, especially as a director, to help, you know, faculty to see that no matter what that person's background, you know, there's an ability to help them learn, an ability to provide hope for mm-hmm. students. Because there was a moment of despair where even I felt like I wanted to commit suicide, right? I felt like really just in despair. Mm-hmm. And I do not want students to feel that way, nor do I want faculty to feel that way. My role at Valencia, for example, is twofold. It is to help ensure that faculty are not saying, oh, the student can't learn, or they can't do anything for the students. Because I heard that from colleagues. And so I want to make sure, like in my program, that I'm instilling that sense of hopefulness within the faculty member, knowing that, you know what, from where I came from, not knowing how to read well and struggling with X, Y, and Z. I'm a doctor now. Like, I have my doctorate, right? I'm able to provide food for my family. I'm able to you know, to give out money to folks and so forth to support causes and whatnot. And not to say I don't have the funds or the means for that. You know what I'm saying? And there's just that the worst kind of feeling to be in that kind of situation where you don't have a sense of hope. Even for faculty members, I know what it's like going through my process, the program that I'm directing, and to feel like, oh my goodness, if I don't have this job, what can I do for my family? Mm-hmm. So I look at it from that lens as well to ensure that faculty members who are going through this arduous process, they have hope and they understand that they can get through it. If we support them well enough, if we guide them in the right way to make sure that the things that they're doing is meaningful enough, they can see that they have purpose in terms of teaching the courses that they're teaching and that they're instilling some kind of hope within their students, helping them to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Because that light is very dim for some, you know what I'm saying? Or they can't even see the light, you know what I'm saying? It's like a speck. So that's the reason why I, in terms of sharing my background, I think that's really important for me to hone in on that in this conversation, because it kind of seeps into the other questions that we're going to be talking about, or I will be responding to very shortly.
Yeah. That's so beautiful, friend, too, yeah. Because a lot of times people just go to work with the idea of, okay, I've got a task to do. And my task maybe is to direct this program and to make sure our education standards are this high. But really, you have such a passion and a heart for a deeper meaning, is to give these students hope and to share your experience. So I think that's awesome, an awesome way to go to work every day.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh. And it sounds cliche for some, but it is the truth, because it's the worst feeling just to not be able to provide for someone and to have to beg, you know, so.
So it sounds to me like you value people more than the processes and the stuff that have to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're helping them along the journey of getting tenured and getting into the process, but you're also, you're valuing them and holding them in great esteem. And so giving them honor and respect and all that's due them.
Yes, most definitely. Thank you, Baba.
I love it. Okay, so let's jump into our first question here for you. Again, we're talking about this idea of the leader teacher. So maybe this applies, Claudine, especially for our audience. Maybe they're working at a nonprofit, or they're in a corporation, or within a religious organization, and they have a group of team members that they are leading. So we're coming at it from that perspective. So maybe not specifically in the education field, although some might be, but just in general, why is it important for leaders to invest in the knowledge of their followers?
I wholeheartedly believe in collaboration, and it takes a village to get things done. And so it is so important to tap into the strengths of our team members, right? No matter who they are. So I have not only faculty working with me who are facilitators, they're mentors to those tenure track faculty members who go through the program, but I also have staff assistants, right? I have an admin and a coordinator. And my coordinator, when I told her, I was like, what do you want to do? Like, what do you see yourself doing in 5 years? You know, what interests you? She was kind of shocked, like, you're asking me that question. And I was like, yeah, I want to hear your voice. I want you to be able to collaborate. I want you to be able to partake in the plan, the mission that we have at the college and also within our program. And I remember, you know, Jim. So awkward. It's like calling dad by his first name. Like, oh my gosh.
Whatever.
You can call me whatever you want. You're part of the family. You know that.
Whatever's comfortable.
But I remember listening to him in terms of a sense of belonging. And so if we are all on board in terms of identifying what that mission is, what that strategic plan is, then everyone can partake, no matter who they are. It shouldn't be just, you know, the top dogs in or the stakeholders within the system. It should also be people from the back end who's working from the back end, because there's value in that. And one example, my coordinator, by me having to give her the leeway to you know, share her voice, to give her insight in terms of how we can make this better, how we can make this system better. My candidates, when I first walked in, you know, my first year, my candidates shared with me their disgruntledness in terms of the process, and that they hate the way we're submitting our project, right, our portfolio. And so I shared with my coordinator, I'm like, there must be a better way. Like, how might we figure out how to have them use a different mechanism rather than using OneNote or Word? There must be a better way to help them submit their work. And so she came up with this great idea in terms of using Canvas and this, that, and the other. And now we're using Canvas, right? Yeah. So she's able to feel like she's a contributor. There's a sense of belonging there. There's a sense of, you know, hey, I'm valued. And that's what they want. They want to feel that value, but we need to invest. We need to make sure that their voices are heard and that they need to see that we trust them, because there's some people who do talk. I don't care for people who, to be honest with you, who are just saying, oh yeah, I want to hear your voice, and meanwhile there's no action behind it. So it's important to make sure that we show as well as state that your voice is heard, and here's what you can do, and we act upon it. And now we have this in place, and the deans, people, the candidates, they love this new way of submitting work, something as simple as that. You know what I'm saying? So I do believe that, number one, we, you know, build that trust. Number two, voices should be heard and also act upon in terms of the feedback that's been given from all stakeholders, everyone within your team.
No, that's so good. And actually, it seems like a theme. Last week's episode, we were talking about building commitment within the organization. And that same idea came up of allowing everybody in the team's voice to be heard and to let people know that they're valued in that way, and that you appreciate and value their expertise and their knowledge. And so I think that's just so important, and especially for leaders to invest in continued learning for their team members who have those strengths.
Yeah.
So if you take feedback, I like your third point there, Claudine. If you take the feedback but don't do anything with it, that just took the air out of somebody's life, that devalues them, that makes them feel like, what if I'm just then, I'm just an asset. I'm just a resource. Mm-hmm. I'm just a product, something you're using. But I think some of the strongest leaders I've ever met actually take that feedback and will, even if the feedback needs to be a no, but to bring it in such a way that the person feels valued. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you know what? It may not work for this time, but I love what you're on, the way you're approaching this. I want you more involved in this. I still want you involved in this process. Mm-hmm. Even if the person throws you an idea that's way out there, you don't just shoot them down. You just say, you know what? I love that approach. I love the thought. Let's see how we can work this in.
Yeah, some kind of compromise.
Yeah, you come back into the table. You're at the table now. I want you to bring what you have with you. Because every person has something to give. Everybody has something to put into, especially, here's the thing. We're believers. So if we're believing God brought the team together, then everybody has something to contribute to the team.
Right. Yeah, I love
definitely.
That. Definitely. Yeah. So why is continued learning so vital for leaders and for students?
So one of the things that I wanted to share is that it creates mobility in terms of the program or the organization for the most part. Mm-hmm. And it learning should not be stagnant, or like your role in a position should not remain stagnant. Like you're not just given your job responsibilities. There's other things involved in terms of your role at whatever institution or place that you're working at. And so it's important to make sure that first and foremost, we keep revisiting the mission, reassessing, you know, what the current conditions are, right? And also identifying your purpose. I'm a firm believer of purpose. Mm-hmm. And so I try to make sure that we tap into that, especially with my team. And so, for example, I was talking to my admin assistant last week, and I was like, hey, you know, I need to know your goals. I need to know what's going on in reference to that. And she's like, are you really serious about this? And I'm like, yes. You know, it's important for you to understand that your purpose is significant. And she's a believer too. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the space that we're in at a college, it's so important that she knows her purpose can help mold, can help change the way we do things within our department. And so my goal is to make sure that we identify where her personal strengths are, and then she can start infusing those strengths within our team. Even something as simple as like organizing our folders, the way we structure things in terms of collecting grades. I was like, please share, you know, what the solution should be. And she was like amazed by it. But so she has to do the learning on her part. She has to investigate and explore and really tap into her own personal experiences or professional experiences to help us adjust or, fix the issues that we have in terms of how we are not as organized. So that's something that was never done in the past in terms of organizing our program and even the folders and all that stuff or how we collect grades. And I told her, I was like, I need you to, you know, to give some kind of insight, like, how do we go about fixing this? And so she's tapping into that as well. But I told her, continue to look into other things that you might want to learn. So that way you can bring it to the forefront. Because again, it shouldn't be just for the job itself, but it should also be for your own personal sake as well, in terms of trying to see how I can develop myself. I think there's a twofold in that as well, in terms of just making it more accessible in many ways in terms of the learning that you do, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes total sense. And I'm glad you brought up something so simple like organizing folders, something that sounds so simplistic, but at the end of the day, can really elevate your organization. And sometimes people look down on like simple tasks like that, but really somebody who can think of new ways to organize or can bring clarity to a project, even in the simplest terms, adds so much value to the organization.
Yep.
So we're talking about learning or growing and continued growth and bringing in people's voices, like all these things matter. It's not just about maybe somebody who's good in front of a mic. It's about all the different team members who can add value with their specific skills and their knowledge. So I think that's awesome. Okay, so we have another question. I was deep diving on you online. And part of your bio on the internet talked about an individualized learning plan. And I just thought that was so interesting and wanted to know more about it and pick your brain about it. So can you tell us more about what an individualized learning plan is?
This is something that we innately do as human beings for the most part, individualized learning plan. So it sounds fancy, but we just do that no matter which space we're in. Mm-hmm. We identify what the need is, right? Mm-hmm. We do like a needs assessment. And then we try to figure out, okay, what is the issue at hand, right? After realizing that, hey, students are not doing well on X, Y, and Z, or things are not going well within my division or whatever the case may be, how might I solve this issue? What should be the goal, right? In order to get to that goal, however, you need to have conversations with your colleagues, with, you know, your peers or what have you, to ensure like, hey, am I making this up? Like, have you noticed that we're constantly having this issue? Or if you're having this issue, like, let's say in my classroom, for example, like, am I making this up? So when you're having those conversations with your peers, you're realizing, okay, I'm not just making this up. There is an issue at hand. Mm-hmm. And how do we address it? So one of the things, and it's kind of tapping into the previous question in terms of learning, one of the things that we're noticing, mental health is a big issue now. There's a gap there. There's a reason that these, you know, students or even faculty are stressed out, they're burnt out. So how do we address that? And so with the individualized learning plan, you're tapping into that need, you're having conversations. And then after having a conversation, you discern what is the goal that you want to achieve? Like, what is the solution? What is the intervention that you're going to have in place? Right. And we call that a learning outcome or a learning goal or an objective. Yeah. And then you tap into the different types of resources that would help to meet that learning outcome or that goal. And it can be an activity. It can be, you know, training. It can be whatever the case may be. You're going to test it out to see if it works. And then if it doesn't work out, right, then you start to reassess. So we call this like a reflective practice where after you test out whatever that intervention is, if it doesn't work, then you start to think in a cyclical way, okay, I tried this. This didn't work. What else do I need to do? Mm-hmm. So it's always like going through that whole cycle of trying to figure out how might I better improve whatever intervention I have in place. And that's just the bottom nutshell of an ILP is really tapping into even yourself, individualized learning plan. It can be your own pedagogy or your own I don't like to say weakness, it sounds really deficit minded, but you know, your own areas that you would like to improve upon, right? And just keep looking at how ways in which you can improve that. And even if it's, if you mastered it, great for you, but there's always some kind of paradigm shift, some kind of shift that happens. So just continuously taking a step back and revisiting how might I better improve, you know, X, Y, and Z. So that's the ILP in a nutshell, but they have a bulk of it. So my team at within TLA, they have three that they have to work on. So one is like an action research. The second one can be student or faculty centered. The third one can be, you know, like some kind of training of some sort.
And how can leaders help their followers grow through something like that? Like, what are ways they can incorporate that into their leadership role?
I think leaders can incorporate the ILP into their leadership role by, again, just taking a step back and, first and foremost, setting goals. So depending on where you're working, like, again, there's a mission statement and just reevaluating, like, in order to get to that mission, you know, what are the goals that we have in place? And have we met those goals? If you're not meeting those goals, what are the needs or what are the issues, the gaps that you're identifying? And then trying to figure out by, you know, kind of tearing it apart, right? What do we need to do in order to address that specific goal? Like, what are the indicators that will help us to discern whether or not we're meeting that goal? And that one specific indicator, if you're not addressing it correctly, right, then it's really tapping into some kind of intervention to address that indicator of that within that goal.
Right.
Two would have to just really be aware of not just their goals and tasks and end result that they want to, that they want to address, but then also just keeping an eye on their followers. Hey, is this person look like they're struggling in this area? How can I help them get to that goal and end point?
Right. Exactly. And that that conversation with your colleagues is key, or with your peers. So you shouldn't be working on it by yourself. We use our peers. We use the people at hand, like the people that we serve, our students in this particular case. We also use, you know, literature to help us figure out, you know, what are the best practices or trends that are out there that are helping to address the issues that we're seeing within our classroom in this particular case.
That's good.
So, there is a business term, and you're probably familiar with it. It says, your system is perfectly designed to achieve the results you get. So basically, what you're saying is we always have to be looking at our results. We always have to be looking at our mission, our goal. Yeah. And if we're not achieving that goal, then something in our system is... is interrupting that process, either a gap or something.
Correct.
Stumble. If we're overachieving, then fantastic. We've got a very successful system. But then if you're overdoing it, you still have to look at your process and system and saying, okay, are we going to burn the machine out? Is something over?
Correct.
So, but this is not a one-time event, right? This is something that we have to always be doing.
Always do.
So what would be, if you're, listen, if there's leaders going to be listening to us, and let's say I'm a listener, and I'm, for instance, let's just keep it very simple. I'm a group leader somewhere. I have a group of people that gather with me every couple of weeks. We do a study on something. So if I were looking at setting up an ILP for myself, kind of a plan, would I be reassessing this every day? Would I be reassessing this every few weeks, every few months? I mean, just as a, just a general.
Yeah. So that's a very good question. It depends in terms of, you know, like how frequently you complete a specific task, right? Or how frequently, you know, you check your goals. So, so for example, for like a faculty member, you know, we tend to check it once a semester. In terms of my program, I'll check it once a year. Right. Depending on what the situation is. So once a year, my fellow directors and myself, we evaluate whether or not our goals have been met. Right. Because it makes sense to do so. And then we keep establishing more and more goals. But the thing is that I'm not sure if I had stressed, it's so important that we identify what's happening within our current climate.
Because those
goals will change.
Right.
So, for example, again, we're seeing that there's a decline in terms of student enrollment. We're seeing a decline in terms of mental health and burnout. So we're trying to reestablish, like, what are the new goals that we're going to set, or a strategic plan that we're going to set for our college. In reference to the college, we create or reestablish a strategic plan like every 5 years.
Right.
So we revisit, we identify, here are the issues that we're seeing. So every 5 years, in this particular case, we are revisiting our plan. But within our departments, however, we're revisiting our goals to see if it aligns with the strategic plan each year. To see, are we meeting, you know, marginalized students? Are we meeting, you know, high graduation rates or transfer rates and so forth? So that's something that we're ongoingly doing. But the faculty, depending, again, on your role, your position, you might do it semester by semester.
That's good.
That's good too. I like it in regards to goal setting. Sometimes we put unachievable goals or like heavy burdens on ourselves that don't need to be. And like you said, it might invite, it might depend on our environment or the situation. And if we can't meet those goals, then we start feeling depressed or burned out ourselves. So I think it's really important, like you said, to keep reevaluating to make sure that they're realistic goals that we can attain and that we can correct ourselves through that.
So, Pauline,
what are some of the biggest learning challenges that you've noticed, especially for adults? Some maybe learning challenges, and then, or maybe what stops people from continued learning or saying that they don't want to learn?
I'm smiling because I think this is like a theme that's happening in our conversation.
Yeah.
I think the learning challenges is time. There are multiple personal issues. Right now, in terms of the economy, for the most part, bandwidth, you know, being able to just, you know, have the time, the mindset to devote time in terms of to learn. Right now, it's just, you know, you're just on the go. You're like a hamster on that wheel and just keep on going and keep going, and you're never stopping. And then that burnout occurs, right? That becomes problematic. So when do we have time for ourselves? And I think it's just allotting time, being disciplined enough to say, I need to make sure that first and foremost, is this healthy for me, right? In terms of just continuously going and not really taking a moment of pause. I think that's the problem first and foremost. That is a challenge for adults, that we do not oftentimes take a moment of pause. We're just always on the go. And that impedes us from learning, that impedes us from actually taking the time to develop ourselves and to have self-care. So even I told my supervisor today, I was like, you know, I said, I have no meetings, but guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to take some time to read, to read, awesome. Because again, my concern is about right now mental health, because my goal has changed. And so I'm going to take some time to read about neuroscience and how it impacts one's learning and one's mental health, and how faculty can probably help improve mental health of their students, but also themselves. You know what I'm saying? But I'm forcing myself to have a moment of pause. It's uncomfortable, but we need to do that. We need to sketch out some time for that. And that reminder that goes off on your cell phone, if you put a reminder saying, take time to read, eventually you will start doing it, because it's like a nuisance.
I love that, putting technology to work for us instead of being captured by it.
Yes.
Well, Claudine, thank you so much for being on the podcast. We so much value your expertise and your passion for learning and for helping others to learn and find their purpose and goals. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me once again. This was fun.
Okay, then that means you'll have to come back on.
And I would love to.
Continue the conversation.
Yeah, we have a lot more follow-up questions now, so we'll bring you back on for our audience. But we appreciate you and love you so much. Is there any place that people can connect with you online or learn more about you or your organization, what you're doing?
Oh, yeah, they can definitely venture to our website, Valencia College. So it's the Teaching and Learning Academy, and we have other institutions who look at the work that we do. And my contact information is there, so feel free to reach out to me if anything.
Awesome. Thank you so much, friends.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you again for inviting me.
Well, guys, thanks so much for joining us for Leadership U. We will see you again next week.
See you later.
Thank you for listening to the Leadership U podcast. For more resources for leaders, visit our website at volunteeru.org.